These flawless traits are an indication of not just the unsullied personalities of the Ahlul Bayt, but indicate the infallibility of their immaculate ancestor, the Prophet of Islam, the exemplar par excellence for all mankind, as God calls him in the Noble Quran. Imam Reza, peace upon him, who was kind to everyone, did not tolerate any deviation. Even if the person who committed wrong was to be his relative or brother, as is clear by an admonition from the 8th Imam to his erring brother Zayd, which shows it is virtue that exalts a person in the sight of God. One day, when Imam Reza was delivering a speech in a grand assembly, he heard Zayd praising himself before the people, saying, "I am so and so." Imam Reza asked him, "O Zayd, have you trusted the words of the grocers of Kufa and are conveying them to the people? What kind of things are you talking about? The sons of Ali ibn Abi Talib and Fatima Zahra are worthy and outstanding only when they obey the commandments of Allah and keep themselves away from sin and blunder. You think you are like Imam Musa Kazim, Imam Ali ibn Hussein, and other imams? Whereas they took pains and bore hardships on the way to Allah and prayed to Allah day and night. Do you think you will gain without pain? Beware that if a person of us, the Ahlul Bayt, performs a good deed, he gets twice the reward, because not only he performed good deeds like others, but also that he has maintained the honor of Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. If he practices something bad and does a sin, he has performed two sins. One is that he performed a bad act like the rest of the people. And the other one is that he has negated the honor of Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O brother, the one who obeys Allah is from us, the Ahlul Bayt, and the one who is a sinner is not ours. Allah said about the son of Noah, who cut the spiritual bondage with his father, "He is not out of your lineage, but he was your lineage. I would have saved him from the deluge and granted him salvation." In 201 AH, Imam Reza, peace upon him, was forcibly brought to the city of Marv in Khorasan by Ma'mun, who was afraid of the popularity among the Muslim Ummah of the Prophet's heir. In order to deceive the people, Ma'mun outwardly showed respect to Imam Reza, peace upon him, and offered him the caliphate, an offer which the Imam politely refused with the words, "If the caliphate is really yours, you owe not to give to others what God has given you as a trust. And if it does not belong to you, how can you give to others what is not yours?" The crafty caliph was stupefied, but threatened the imam that he had no other option and should agree to become his heir apparent, although Imam Reza, peace upon him, was some 20 years older than Ma'mun. To celebrate the occasion, but actually to deceive the public, the caliph had poets sing praises of the imam and had their hands and even mouths stuffed with pearls and jewels from the public treasury, the looted wealth of the Muslim people. The black insignia of the Abbasids was replaced by the green insignia of the Alawites, or the descendants of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. And to give the impression of the seriousness to these theatrics, coins were struck, proclaiming the Prophet's 18th infallible heir as heir apparent to the Abbasid usurper, whose great-grandfathers Mansur Dawaniqi and Abul Abbas Safah had 7 years ago hijacked the caliphate on the slogan of returning the rule of Islamic realm to the Ahl al-Bayt from the godless Umayyads. Soon, to his horror, Ma'mun realized that, through such theatrics, he had failed to isolate the Imam from the Ummah, as the popularity of the Prophet's rightful successor grew every day amongst the people. In view of his exemplary lifestyle, his God-given knowledge and wisdom, and his dynamic debates with the leaders and scholars of various schools of thought and religion, Ma'mun then invited leaders of various religions and schools of thought and asked Imam Reza, peace upon him, to debate with them, in the hope that these scholars of Jews, Sabians, Zoroastrians, Christians, Hindus, and atheists would outwit the Prophet's successor. For instance, when Imran As-Sabi asked Imam Reza, peace upon him, "Do we declare the oneness of God by reality or by description?" the Imam answered, "Certainly, God, the light, the initiator of this cosmos, and the foremost, is one without any associate or any accompanying thing. He is unique without a second. The initiator has been self-existent, and the light that is dispending with everything. He did not exist in a definite time and will not last for a definite time. He has not existed in anything, has not hidden himself in anything. No sayer can invent a statement describing him, even if he thinks of light, example, apparition or shadow. And that was before the creation and in the situation where there was nothing but him. The same situation is in this position. There are only imaginary attributes and a translation of a picture in the mind purposed for making others understand. Did you understand, Imran?" Imran Sabi, who lacked proper cognition of God, the one and only, had no other choice but to admit the truth of Islam. After this lively discourse on the Almighty Creator, of which we have only presented excerpts. Imam Reza, peace upon him, held similar debates with Jewish and Christian scholars and proved to them the truth and righteousness of Islam. For instance, during the debate with the Jewish scholar Ras al-Jalut, the Imam asked him about the prophethood of Moses, peace upon him. In reply, the Jewish scholar cited the miraculous parting of the sea waters and the turning of the staff into a giant snake. Imam Reza, peace upon him, said, "So you believe in Moses since he did what others could not do? Therefore, whoever claims prophethood and then does something which others are not able to do, you would believe him?" Ras al-Jalut replied, "No, I believe in Moses because he has a high status in the sight of God. And we cannot believe whoever claims to be prophet unless he brings miracles such as those of Moses. Imam Reza Pisepanhim said, "Then how do you believe in the prophets before Moses, whereas they could not bring miracles such as those of Moses?" The Jewish scholar replied, "I said that I believe those who perform some miracles for proving their prophethood." Imam Reza Pisepanhim said, "Why do you not have faith in Jesus? Did he not revive the dead and heal the blind, leprous and mad, and build beds from clay and made them alive on the command of God?" The Jewish scholar replied, "It is said that he did these, but we did not see them." Imam Reza Pisepanhim then said, "Have you seen the miracles of Prophet Moses, or have you just heard them from reliable persons?" The Jewish scholar acknowledged the words of the Imam, who then went on to say that Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as the last and greatest messenger of God, was an orphan and worked as a shepherd, but it was God who gave him the eternal miracle of the Noble Quran, which will remain forever, while the miracles performed by the other prophets, including Moses, were time-bound. The Imam thus proved that the miracle of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, that is the Noble Quran, is eternal and alive, and can be seen and acknowledged by all, while the miracles of the past prophets are events of the past. We once again congratulate our listeners and end our special feature with a wonderful saying from Imam Reza Pisepanhim, which is indeed food for thought. "As for the brain, it is the greatest of all Allah's creatures. It dominates the whole body, controls all movements of it, and drives it to wherever it desires. And by it, man is distinguished from the rest of animals. Allah has singled out the brain for man, and through it, he has ennobled man over all his creatures. Surely, the brain is a world of wonders. No creature can match it in greatness, for it contains stores which never are full, and it preserves whatever knowledge is deposited in it. If we want to mention the wonders of the brain, then we have to write a full book about them. Glory belongs to him who has originated and created the brain."
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah.
Allah, Allah, Allah.
Today's tip: what are the tricks of Shaitan, the Satan, and the soul? And when it comes to our ubudiyah, how do they infiltrate?
Allah, Allah, Allahu Rabbi, la sharika lahu.
So, dear listeners, we are talking about the tricks and the delusions and the deceptions of Shaitan and ourself, and how it impacts and affects our ubudiyya, our servitude, our obedience, and our worship to Allah. Now, what is really interesting is that the things which are possible for the common people to do, whether it's in our prayers or our worship or these things, these common things that, for example, for the common people seem to be very simple, such as the salah, the daily prayers, for the people of knowledge, the ahl al-ma'rifah, it actually becomes a delight. It is one of the most satisfying and pleasurable things and actions, the salah, the daily prayers. Now, because these things which to common people seem to be common, such as the du'as and the supplications and the litanies and the different types of worship and obedience and ubudiyya to Allah, in reality, these are the secrets and the keys to spiritual wayfaring. Now, when it comes to the spiritual wayfaring, the salik, the spiritual wayfarer who is on this road to ubudiyya, must be very careful that when it comes to their knowledge or when it comes to the different manasik, the different rites and rituals, such as the daily prayers or the du'as that are prescribed by the Ahlul Bayt, when the salik and the spiritual wayfarer is doing these things, they should be very careful that the deceptions and the tricks of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara do not interfere in these actions that they are doing when it comes to the ubudiyya of Allah. Now, of course, this kind of protection and being careful of the intrusions and the deceptions of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara, this takes a lot of focus, it takes attention, it takes meditation, it takes time, it takes practice, it takes determination, and it takes, of course, as we said, self-reflection. One needs to contemplate on their intention, on their niyya, and they need to go and reflect deeply into what they do, what their desires are, what their mission is, what their goal is, what their ultimate objective is in this journey, in this journey of the ubudiyya of Allah. Also, one needs to be strict with one's self. One needs to examine one's self and to learn the basic principles of the activities of the soul, and also pay attention to spiritual nutrition. Now, activities and different aspects of the soul, different qualities, if we could say, you know, such as anger or greed or jealousy or desire, these things need to be examined very carefully. And of course, the salah and the du'as that have been prescribed are spiritual nutrition. And so in these few ways, we are able to protect ourselves from the intrusions and the deceptions of shaitan and the nafs-e ammara in order to be able to strengthen and purify our ubudiyya.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah,
ya Mannan, IRIB, English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
Allah is the unique Arabic name for the one true God. He is the only one worthy of worship, with no rivals, equals, or partners. Allah is not like His creation, as nothing shares His divine essence and attributes, such as being the Creator, the Provider, the Most Merciful, the All-Powerful, the Most Just, the All-Wise, and the All-Knowing. Allah is without partner or equal in His authority and actions. The world was created by Allah's command alone. He runs the world and controls it all alone. Muslims believe that Allah is one, indivisible, and unequal in His divinity and knowledge. He does not have any ancestors, nor does He have descendants, and He is without wife, partner, or offspring. None came before Him, and He is in no need of any angel, prophet, or saint. Of all the sins committed by His creation, none is greater than the act of shirk, which is the Arabic word for associating partners with Allah. In the Islamic tradition, Allah has 99 names, which include the most loving, the friend, the most kind, and the most powerful. Allah can be translated in English language as the one and only God.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were speaking about, which was how to protect ourselves from the effects of the intrusions and the deceptions of Shaitan and the Nafs-e Ammara when it comes to our Ubudiyya, and of course the effects that this intrusion has upon our Ubudiyya. Now, of course, when talking about the effects of the intrusions and deceptions of Shaitan and the Nafs-e Ammara, of course we find that our Ubudiyya, our worship, our du'as, they are no longer as sincere as they used to be. They are no longer as, they don't bring about the bliss and satisfaction that they used to, or they become tainted and corrupted. And of course the intended consequence, which is the ultimate perfection of a human being, is not achieved. Of course, why? Because of the deceptions and the intrusions of Shaitan and the Nafs-e Ammara. In the previous segment, we talked a little bit about how we need to protect ourselves by examining within ourselves, self-reflection, contemplation, meditation, and of course, spiritual nutrition, such as the daily prayers, such as the du'as prescribed by the Ahlul Bayt. Another one of the things that we should do is to kind of distrust what we are doing in our activities and our ubudiyya, meaning always check ourselves. Are we really doing a certain action for the pure sake of ubudiyya? This is what is meant by distrusting yourself when it comes to your activities. So, for example, you're giving charity. At the very superficial level, you might think that you are doing it for the sake of Allah. But when you think about it a little bit deeply and you kind of double-check yourself, you cross-examine yourself, then you might realize that I was doing it to show off to other people, and perhaps even more subconsciously and more in a subtle manner. We might just be doing it to show it to the person that we are giving the charity to. And so it is quite possible, dear friends, that because of a little bit of negligence and not paying attention, this kind of ulterior motive, this tainted niyyah, may overcome a human being and knock them down and drive them towards perdition and annihilation. When one realizes that the actions that they did for ubudiyya and the actions that they did in Ubudiyya for the sake of Allah were not done purely for the sake of Allah, then truly we have lost both in this world and the hereafter. And when we do realize that perhaps in the actions that we committed in the past there was an ulterior motive, we ask Allah the Almighty, who is the most merciful and the most quick to forgive, we ask Him to forgive us and to make up for the faults and the flaws and the shortcomings in our ubudiyya and our worship. And so therefore we must try our best to make sure that the intrusions and the deceptions and the tricks of shaitan and the nafse ammara, the base carnal soul, we protect ourselves from these deceptions and these tricks so that we can purify and strengthen our ubudiyya, our servitude, our worship, and our obedience to Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website, www.parstoday.com.
And now we invite you to listen to Brother Nu'man Ali Khan.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. فدلاهما بغرور رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. The 22nd ayah of Surah Al-A'raf is a long one, but in this brief reminder I want to share with you the first part of the expression that's used in it that has just an incredible amount of wisdom for life in our dealings with shaitan. Allah Azza wa Jalla is describing how shaitan got our parents Adam and Hawa salamu alayhima to make the mistake that they made. What was his strategy to get them to listen to him? Not just what he said to them. We all know that he whispered to them. We all know that he offered them eternity and that they could stay in Jannah. We know that. But how did he do it? What method did he use? That method is important to understand, and it's captured in the first expression of the ayah. فَدَلَّهُمَا بِغُرُورٍ. He, dalla is used when you draw a bucket. Like dalw in Arabic is a bucket. And adla is to drop a bucket down and pull it right back up. You know, in the old times, there's a well and you kind of crank up the water, you know, and you pull the bucket back up. This is adla. But dalla is to slowly lower the bucket or to put a bucket, you know, for a very primitive way of hunting an animal. You have some food, like a carrot or something. You put it inside a bucket and it's tied to a rope. And the animal comes and you kind of pull it little by little by little by little towards yourself. And the animal follows it. This is actually called dalla. Like literally, shaitan didn't go out and say, disobey Allah. He offered it a little bit, just a small little bit of compromise, and they listened. And then he offered just a little bit more. It's harmless. What I'm saying isn't haram. I'm just saying, just don't take it a little bit easy, you know? And then you don't have to eat from this tree, in the case of our parents. You don't have to eat from. I'm not saying you should eat from the tree. I'm just saying at least check it out. It's a beautiful tree. There's no harm looking at it, is there? Now, look, Allah's commandment was, وَلَا تَقْرَبَ هَذِهِ الشَّجَرَةِ. Don't go near this tree. So the first thing he says, look, at least you're not touching it, okay? At least you're not touching it. Just go near it. What's the big deal? And then when they go near, then you know what? It's not like you're not supposed to climb it. You're just not supposed to eat from it. Just have a little climb. It's no big deal. And it's not at one time. Dalla also suggests that these suggestions came a day, then another day, then another day, then another day. Like this was a process for this guy. It wasn't like he whispered to Adam alayhi salam and immediately he went and ate from the tree. There's actually an entire strategic, little by little by little, winning over the argument that he's doing. فَدَلَّهُمَا بِغُرُورٍ. And that's what he does to us to this day. This is the reason it's mentioned in the Quran, that he drew them out with using this, and the بِغُرُورَ I didn't translate, using deception. This is a kind of deception. In other words, there are things that are clearly wrong. You and I know that. There are things that are clearly, clearly wrong.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. جل في علا هو أنسي وملاذي أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, knowing good and evil in the self-development. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of knowing good and evil in the self-development. When we talk about the self-development, obviously we are looking towards the perfection and we want to reach to the perfection. Therefore, it is necessary to distinguish between good and evil, and we cannot deal or we cannot consider good and evil as equal. And we cannot be negligent towards the good and evil. It is necessary to know about the good and also the evil. Because when we know about the good, we can spread goodness. We can spread the good habits and ethics in the society. We can build our good ethics and virtues in ourselves. And if we know evil, we can better avoid this. Therefore, we must distinguish between good and evil with the same idea that when we distinguish between the light and darkness and between the noise and silence. Therefore, when we differentiate between the noise and silence, we differentiate between the light and darkness. Therefore, we must distinguish between the good and evil, because even in the Quran, we see that when Allah talks about the believers, obviously those who perform the good deeds, Allah refers them as being the mu'min or believers. And Allah says, Allahu waliyul ladhina amanu yukhrijuhum min adh-dhulumati ila nur. Allah is the close guardian of those who believed, and He takes them out of darkness and He brings them to the nur, to the light. وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا And whereas those who denied the right path, the goodness, أَوْلِيَاؤُهُمُ الطَّاغُوا Their close guardians are the rebels. يُخْرِجُونَهُم مِّنَ النُّورِ إِلَى الظُّلُمَاتِ They take them out of light and take them towards the darkness. Therefore, it is necessary to distinguish between the good and evil in order to reach the self-development and self-perfection. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of knowing the good and evil in the self-development. And we said that The way we know the light and darkness, the way we distinguish between the light and darkness, the way we distinguish between the noise and silence, similarly, we need to distinguish between good and evil. And we said that the good is something which is referred as the light, and Allah is the close guardian of those who perform good deeds, who believed in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, those who are good people. And on the other hand, the evil or the rebels are the close guardian of those who do not believe in Allah, who performs evil, and their guardians are rebels who take them towards the darkness. Therefore, our goal, our aim is to live in the light. And this light will help us. It will take us out of fear, whereas darkness is full of fear. Darkness is full of questions. We, in the darkness, do not feel comfortable, whereas in light, we are comfortable. Similarly, when there is a silence and noise. So therefore, we need to differentiate, distinguish between good and evil. We must know. And therefore, we see that in the Islamic teachings, we have a branch which is known as Amar bil Ma'ruf wa Nahi anil Munkar, commanding for the good and forbidding the evil. Why to command for the good? If we do not know about the good, we cannot command others to the good. Therefore, it is necessary to know about the good. It is necessary to know about evil. One of the reasons that we see that in a community, in the society, we see that the evil or something which is bad or a bad habit, it spreads so quickly, it is because when they do not know about the evil, number one. Number two, when they consider it as a small. For example, if someone considers a sin small and he differentiates between the small and big sins, then obviously he might think, let's commit this small sin, it doesn't matter, and we can repent. But later it becomes the habit and it spreads in the society. Therefore, it is necessary to know about the good and evil and to avoid evil and perform good in order to reach to the self-development as a self-perfection, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode. God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. In the United States, Rudy Giuliani has been hit with ethics charges over baseless claims he made about the 2020 presidential election being stolen while serving as an attorney for former President Donald Trump. The charges come a day after a primetime hearing by the House panel investigating the Capitol attack. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the Reuters news agency. The piece is titled, Rudy Giuliani Charged with Ethical Misconduct Over Trump's Big Lie. In the United States, Rudy Giuliani has been hit with ethics charges over baseless claims he made about the 2020 presidential election being stolen while serving as an attorney for former President Donald Trump. The charges were filed on Friday, 10th of June, by the District of Columbia office that police's attorneys for ethical misconduct. The Washington, D.C. Office of Disciplinary Counsel alleges that Rudy Giuliani, who is a member of the D.C. Bar, made baseless claims in federal court filings about the results of the 2020 presidential election in Pennsylvania. The charges were filed with the District of Columbia Court of Appeals Board on professional responsibility. A lawyer for Rudy Giuliani did not have an immediate comment. The charges come a day after the U.S. House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack had its first primetime hearing, in which it outlined evidence that Donald Trump and his allies sought to overturn the 2020 election and incite throngs of Trump supporters to block Congress from certifying Joe Biden's victory. Giuliani, a former U.S. attorney in Manhattan and a former mayor of New York City, has been among Donald Trump's most fervent supporters and repeatedly claimed without evidence that the election had been stolen. The complaint says Rudy Giuliani sought an emergency order to prohibit the certification of the presidential election, an order to invalidate ballots cast by certain voters in seven counties, and other orders that would have permitted the state's assembly to choose its electors and declare Trump the winner in Pennsylvania. The charges say his conduct violated two professional conduct rules in Pennsylvania that bar attorneys from bringing frivolous proceedings without a basis in law or fact, and prohibit conduct that is prejudicial to the administration of justice. These charges against Rudy Giuliani can lead to the suspension of a license to practice law or disbarment. The charges mark the second time that a bar office has taken action against Rudy Giuliani. His New York law license was suspended in June of 2021 after a state appeals court found that Giuliani made demonstrably false and misleading statements that widespread voter fraud undermined the election. Apart from having two of his law licenses suspended, Giuliani's reputation has been stained by his dealings with Ukraine, and he is being investigated by Manhattan federal prosecutors over those business ties with Ukraine. He began representing Donald Trump, a fellow Republican and New Yorker, in April of 2018, in connection with then special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation that documented Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Rudy Giuliani has not been charged with criminal wrongdoing. His lawyer has said the federal investigation is politically motivated. Meanwhile, Thursday's opening session of primetime televised hearings into storming of Capitol Hill on 6th of January 2021 was both revealing and disturbing. The revelations of what exactly took place when a violent mob broke into the halls of U.S. Congress seeking to overturn a Democratic election by preventing the formal certification of Joe Biden's victory are a valuable and shocking addition to the historical record. The House of Representatives Committee that has been investigating the attempted insurrection for the past year, gathering in excess of 140,000 documents and speaking to more than 1,000 witnesses, discovered that Donald Trump's response on learning that the rioters were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," his vice president, was to say that his vice president deserved it. Previously unseen video footage and fresh testimony buried the suggestion made by one Republican congressman that the behavior of the insurrectionists on 6th of January 2021 was like a normal tourist visit, or that it was, as Fox News' most watched host, Tucker Carlson, was still insisting on Thursday, no more than a forgettable minor outbreak of violence. Instead, one police officer, K. Caroline Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury as the Capitol was breached on 6th of January 2021, described being stampeded, knocked unconscious, pepper sprayed and tear gassed by the rioters. There was so much blood on the floor, she slipped over. It was carnage, she said. It was chaos.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel.
Majh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament. June 4, 2018. Let me refer to some of the points mentioned in Imam Khomeini's testament, which is full of useful meaning. The first point is that Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi insisted in his testament on the fact that the Islamic revolution is a divine revolution, and it is mainly based on the will of the people. The Islamic revolution belongs to the people. This means that no individual, social class, or group can and should claim to be the owner of this revolution and consider others as a subsidiary. If anyone was to claim to the owner of this revolution, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi was the most suitable person who was deserving of ownership. This revolution was due to his determination and personality, but Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi considers his own role as very little and considers the revolution as a blessing from God. This is a predominant theme in Imam Khomeini's statements, which has also been stressed and specified in his testament. Therefore, it is the people who are the owners of this revolution. Protecting this divine gift is a duty that lies upon everyone's shoulders.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
the people must consider themselves as the guardians of the revolution. The identity and significance of the revolution are due to its principles, orientations, and values. There have always been, and there will always be, some individuals who have tried to change the revolutionary ideas under the pretext that the conditions have changed. They have tried to separate the aspects related to religion and social justice from the revolution. They have tried to make the revolution devoid of its tendency to fight outsiders, hegemony, and autocracy. They may step into the ring with various motives and under various pretexts to change the revolutionary slogans and aspirations. The people have to be alert. They must know that this revolution is alive due to its values. Being Islamic, adhering to religious principles, opposing hegemony and arrogance, and supporting the oppressed sincerely and openly all over the world are the most essential values among the slogans written on the revolutionary flag.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The moment an exhibition turned into a series of violent assaults committed by the MKO, a cult-like organization that has the blood of 17,000 Iranians on its hands. Press TV's camera crew, reporting on an exhibition showcasing MKO bombings and assassinations, was attacked by angry supporters of the group.
Don't touch my camera. Don't touch my camera.
Go, go, go deep, go deep.
Don't touch my camera.
You go deep.
After being driven out of post-revolution Iran, the MKO based itself in Camp Ashraf in Iraq, where members were forced to pledge allegiance to its leader Massoud Rajavi and demonstrate that allegiance with cult-like behavior for women that meant divorcing their husbands and marrying him. Many families spent years on the fringes of the camp begging for their children to be released, but to no avail. The camp was later dismantled in the wake of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Until 2012, the MKO was on the U.S. terrorist list. It was also blacklisted by the EU until 2009. Since being removed, the new leader of the cult, Maryam Rajavi, has forged close relationships with Western officials.
What unfolded on the streets of Stockholm today was a shocking reminder that the EU has become a safe haven for the MKO, which attacks journalists like myself with little fear of retribution. The question now is, will there be an investigation? Bianca Rahimi, Stockholm.
We are visiting Afghan food markets, where prices are hiking day by day. Food items are short, and people don't have cash to buy them. Customers here tell us about their struggle to provide food and livelihoods.
If I save the whole salary of my 20 days of work, I will be able to buy a sack of flour, because I hardly can make only a dollar per day. However, most of the days, I'm without a job. In such a situation where prices are also skyrocketing, I can no longer provide livelihoods for my family.
On Wednesday, the UN chief said the impacts of the war in Ukraine have generated food and finance crises globally, with vulnerable ones being hit hard. Afghan experts say Afghanistan is among the countries affected harshly.
Previously, the prices of food items, including that of flour, were lower. Since the beginning of Russia-Ukraine conflict, the prices have started to rise. Then a sack of flour was $17, but now it is nearly $30. Unfortunately, our country is also facing an unprecedented drought that has a significant role in food shortages.
In the meantime, Afghan traders and businessmen also complain about the severe impacts of freezing Afghan assets by the U.S. and global sanctions on the country.
The U.S. seizing of Afghan assets has left a severe effect on our markets and livelihoods. Earlier, a dollar was exchanged with 77 Afghanis, but now, due to U.S. sanctions, a dollar has been raised to 89. We urge the U.S. and the international community to not add to the miseries of Afghan people and free their frozen funds as soon as possible.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. and allies froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets, and major funding to the country was halted. Sanctions and ripple effects from the war in Ukraine have triggered food crisis in Afghanistan. Most people here say they can afford a single sack of flour, since the prices have more than doubled. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
There was no sign of pressure on the faces of those who run the European Central Bank when they met on Thursday to agree on bad news for hard-pressed mortgage holders across the 19-nation eurozone. Interest rates will go up by 0.25% next month, most likely 0.5% in September, and that's not where it will end.
Beyond September, based on our current assessment, we anticipate that a gradual but sustained path of further increases in interest rates will be appropriate.
The ECB manages the euro. It will be the bank's first interest rate hike in 11 years. The idea is to bring down inflation. It's now at a record high of 8.1% when the ECB's target is just below 2%. Rising energy, food and accommodation prices are hitting EU citizens hard.
Living in Brussels as well, the cost of living is high already, and then so if it's going up, it's even worse.
Everything is like, so you have to be careful, calculate like exactly what you spend on.
The people got some situation that they don't got enough money to go to the end of the month.
The EU mainly blames Moscow for the financial crisis because of the conflict in Ukraine. The bloc's justice ministers also met on Thursday to figure out a way of seizing the assets of Russian citizens without the need for a conviction in court.
It's a discussion that I have also with our US colleagues. We are on the same line to try to see what is possible to do. But you know that we try to promote the rule of law.
Off the back of sanctions against Russia, the EU's economy is on its knees. Critics say Western powers were wrong not to listen to Moscow's security concerns as they built up military capabilities close to Russia's borders and refused to rule out Ukraine joining NATO. ECB bosses are due to meet again to discuss the financial crisis on the 21st of July. Many are asking if the EU's focus stays on arming Ukraine and not conflict resolution, how can things possibly improve between now and then?
We're on our way to the front line, outside the key Ukrainian stronghold of Avdiivka. We pull up by the side of the road. It feels like no man's land.
The town is fortified well, but we're working on them, dismantling their dugouts with artillery. We're making passages in their defenses and going deeper. You can hear our volleys now.
Now it's too dangerous to take the car along this road as it can be a target for anti-tank missiles fired from the Ukrainians, who are just about a kilometer in that direction, so we're going on foot.
These fighters are from the Donbas, now loyal to Russia. They've been fighting here against Ukrainian nationalists for 8 years. Trench warfare has returned once again to Europe. While some of the world's most advanced weapons are slaughtering dozens of soldiers every day, the best defense remains underground.